Hey everybody, welcome back to the MMA Vivisection with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Connor Rebush.
That's me! I got nervous, you had such build-up.
That's right. I see, this is why you need the karaoke room, Connor.
No, we're not rehashing this on the recorded show. We're not going through this again. Suffice it to say, Zane is afraid of public speaking, and he's decided to make that my problem.
No, I'm just a bully. That's all it is.
Zane has been very mean to me.
Yeah.
Because I like karaoke, which he said was gay. But again, we don't have to go into all that again.
Totally gay balls was, in fact, the particular turn of phrase.
Actually, you know what? I just looked at the card. Let's talk about karaoke some more. That was fun.
Well, I am going to make a brief appeal. I do not normally do this thing, but hey, the MMA Vivisection and Sixth Round are now their own independent thing on our Substack. And as such, I more than ever am looking for subscribers to join up. So if you've been a longtime listener and you are not subscribing to our Substack, please jump on the board and help us out. It means a lot. It is how I'm making my money these days. So, you know, baby needs a new pair of shoes.
He needs any pair of shoes.
Yeah. I am actually...
They stopped letting him go barefoot into the grocery store.
I have duct taped my socks. And really... The athlete's foot is killing me, so.
That'd be so cool to die of athlete's foot. That'd be a memorable way to go.
If that's possible, I would be shocked that some fighter hasn't already done so.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Well,
anybody knows about fungal infections, it's MMA. Mm.
We just had somebody this week say they had a staph infection at their last fight. Who was that?
God.
I'll find out at some point. As soon as I see the name, I'll remember the news.
Yeah, it was. God, I can't remember. But he had a big like staph infection on his forehead.
Oh no, I think this. Oh yeah, I guess it was Jack Della Maddalena.
Yeah, it was Jack Della Maddalena.
Yeah, he just openly admitted it.
Yeah, but there was somebody else too, I think, but.
Benoit Saint Denis had staph infection on his chest.
Yeah, Benoit Saint Denis was the one who had staph on his face.
Yeah.
These fucking dudes, I tell you.
I mean, it is sort of a par for the course, but like, I mean, maybe they should be cleaning their mats better, but it is a thing that is going to happen probably when you're getting all sweaty and rolling around.
Yeah, I think it's, there's... When you're talking about a community made up largely of young men,
yeah,
it just is not going to be clean.
Not known for their hygiene, are they?
No. Even if you clean the hell out of the mats, there is going to be at least one dude in your gym who literally never washes his workout wear.
Yeah.
And you're going to be rolling around with him.
I never wash my hand wraps.
Exactly.
I hang them up to dry. They never smell.
That's all that matters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have staff on my hands, not yet. Also, I hardly wear hand wraps these days. I just put my gloves on. They smell like feet.
Have prevented you from contracting staph.
Yeah, it's like that joke from The Simpsons. They've all, or is it Futurama? All the other diseases have killed the other diseases. So I'm actually sort of at an equilibrium.
That's right.
Yeah. Good.
All right. So yeah, we've got this this fight night card in front of us, which honestly has a lot of fights that I'm looking forward to on it, but is also just, once again, we've talked about this a bit lately, where in the last few years, it just kind of feels, the UFC matchmaking is starting to feel more like one of those lotto pinball machines or ping pong ball machines.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, they just stir it up.
Yeah, where because like Brendan Allen, Chris Curtis, we saw this fight a few years ago. It wasn't a bad fight, but it was a pretty definitive fight. And there's not really any reason to do it again. You know? I'm not going to hate it.
I'd be pissed if I was Brendan Allen. He's on a 6-fight win streak.
Exactly.
Like, here, rematch this guy who knocked you out who just got a split decision win in his last fight, and that's his only win running.
Yeah. Like,
they just don't know what to do with Brendan Allen, I guess. That's what this matchmaking says to me.
Yeah. It is just one of those things where, like, I mean, let me see. If I'm looking at the UFC rankings here, the middleweight top 15, Brendan Allen is ranked 6th. Chris Curtis is ranked 14th. Paulo Costa is not booked. Nassourdine Imavov is not booked. Jack Hermanson is not booked. Marvin Vettori is not booked. Jared Cannonier is not booked.
But are those guys available to fight in an empty warehouse at a moment's notice?
Yeah.
Do you think the average time for like a camp, it must have fallen in the last few years? I feel like we get a lot more routine, like 6 weeks out a fighter is booked.
I think the UFC wants it to be shorter. I think,
of course,
I think that the actual necessary time has not fallen. Like Max Holloway, I just was reading about him the other day where he was talking about his upcoming fight with Justin Gaethje, and he was lamenting like, you know, I only had 6 weeks for that fight. He was lamenting his fight with Dustin Poirier rather.
Yeah.
At lightweight the last time. And he's like, you know, I only had 6 weeks for that fight. It wasn't enough for a real camp, honestly, which is a little bit of fighter cope, but that's fine.
It's also if you spend a lot of your career getting used to 8-week camps.
Yeah.
There's certainly something to be said for the sort of routine your body might adapt to. Like,
yeah,
this is just the amount of time that I know how to get ready in the optimal way. It's not to say that you couldn't get very ready in 6 weeks, but if that's not the norm for you, then absolutely it could mess you up. There's all kinds of little things that can go wrong in preparation where you just like don't show up feeling right.
Yeah. And so now he was talking about he's, you know, in a much better place for the Gaethje fight. He's got a full camp. But I also think that, though, I would say, I think that the idea of an MMA fight camp is a little bit, and I know I'm talking on my ass here, so I'm going to say this and let it be stupid. But I think it is a little bit of a myth for most fighters. Like, it is a creation in part of the UFC just not booking people enough. And one thing I will say that I feel like they've been doing better lately. They've been putting a lot more fights on every card. And I feel like a lot more of the roster actually tends to get the kind of turnover they want lately, where fighters are fighting just more often if they want to fight more often. You know, Chris Curtis just fought 3 months ago, and he fought 6 months before that and 2 months, or well, no, then he, yeah, and like 2 months before that and 4 months before that, he's been fighting pretty much all the time that he's been in the UFC. And I think they're doing better with that. But I also think that in that way, like the old, oh yeah, you know, fighters talking about camp and all that kind of thing was just like, they were getting one and a half fights a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, I mean, I'm not going to be in the gym all the time. I'm going to go do other shit and relax. And I'd like to be fighting 4 times a year, but I'm not. So when they call me, then I'm going to have a camp where I go and get myself fit again and get ready to fight.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, like Chepe Mariscal, is he really going to have an actual fight camp that is prepping just him for a fight?
Yeah, almost certainly not. Yeah.
Yeah. So in that way, I think that, like, yeah, the UFC is maybe pushing fighters to make faster turnarounds than ever. They're more hidebound to their schedule than they used to be. I would say than ever. Back in the early days, it was like, oh, you fought last week, we need you next week. We have five fighters under contract, and the only person that can headline an event is Tito Ortiz.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think that... So I do think at the top, it is getting a little more hurried. We've seen them do, like, you know, what they tried to do with Dricus du Plessis, where he fought Robert Whittaker, and they were like, okay, we want you to fight for the title 2 months later. And it's just
that's the kind of thing that seems to be much more commonplace.
That is much more commonplace. But for the other fighters lower down the cards, I think they're just actually getting to fight a little more often.
Yeah.
And it's probably for the best.
All right.
That turned into a whole screed that I did not know I had in me. Let me tell you.
Yeah. It was so interesting too. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Well, you know. You were silent for an extended period of time, and whether it was sleepiness, awe, or just real careful, thoughtful consideration, I was
happy. Lesson to those people who complain about Connor's tendency to interrupt. Guess what, folks? What happens when I don't interrupt? You get a goddamn essay.
That's right. You get the good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff, let's talk about middleweights.
Brendan Allen, Chris Curtis.
Yeah, as we sort of talked around, literally a rematch of a fight that already happened. Yep. Doesn't really seem like there's much good reason for it to be made.
But yeah.
It has been made. It's happening.
Yeah, I don't know that it is going to be different at all, really. I mean, it might have a different result. Brendan Allen was certainly doing quite well against Chris Curtis early, and there's nothing to say he just gets flatlined the way he did again in the last bout. But he's also, you know, I think there was a good solid period of improvement for Brendan Allen after that Sean Strickland loss in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a couple of years where he just really stepped up his kickboxing game. And at this point, I mean, he's only 28, so he's still not old.
Yeah.
But it does kind of feel like over the past few fights, we're just seeing like who Brendan Allen is right now. And it's a very solid, near elite fighter that I'm not sure is actually elite or will be making any more big jumps.
Yeah. He's solid in one respect, which is that he's well-rounded. He's certainly, like, he seems to be damn near impossible to out-grapple.
Yeah.
That's come in very handy in a couple of the more specialist matchups he's had.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, is a matchup, though, that does sort of test the area where he is less just rock solid.
Yeah.
Because as a striker, he's gotten more solid in that. He more steadier output, throws better combinations. You know, his striking offense just makes a lot more sense. And he doesn't tend to throw himself badly off balance every time he throws. You know, I got to give him props. He used his jab against the southpaw Chris Curtis last time they fought. Even much better fighters don't know to do that. Credit to Henry Hooft, I suppose, who I believe is still working with Allen in his corner.
Yeah, I'll check Instagram.
Yeah. And he landed some really nice kicks. You know, he's turned into a pretty solid kicker, Brendan Allen. What he doesn't have that makes me avoid calling him solid as a striker is defense.
Yeah.
Any defense at all.
Yeah. Especially notably, he doesn't have any defense moving forward. And that's really the only place he knows how to work.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah. He can throw from range. But he doesn't work off the back foot at all.
Yeah, because like there were a couple moments in this fight where Curtis would come forward and throw some big overextended left hand like to the body, and it would just land because Allen only knows how to hop straight back.
Yeah. He doesn't like, I guess me saying his enemy defense coming forward is not to say he has defense going backward.
Right.
What I'm just saying is that all of his game is geared for him to come forward.
He can't control a fight without going forward.
Exactly. And so then not having defense there is actually kind of still a really big problem.
Yeah. It forces him into a position where he's not only still doesn't have defense, but also has no initiative. And even somebody like Chris Kirk, like having some lateral movement, having a good, you know, some good pivots and a nice sort of turning, jabbing, stick and move game could be obviously extremely useful against Chris Curtis. Mm-hmm. Right? Like Jack Hermanson's not a great boxer. Mm-mm. But because Chris Curtis is really bad at cutting off the cage and in lieu of that, of just getting aggressive enough to make it less of an issue, he made Jack Hermanson look like, you know, Muhammad Ali.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, if Brendan Allen, you know, who does know how to, that he can use his jab even against a lefty, if he could stick that jab out there and keep turning, particularly moving to Chris Curtis's right, he could get a ton of just free time to have his reach advantage and use it. But I haven't seen him do that. And in fact, I've seen him get into terrible trouble going back to and including that Sean Strickland fight every time that he is put on the back foot and kept there.
Mm-hmm.
So will Chris Curtis lose the first round again? Probably.
Yeah.
He fights the same way every time. Shit, he might lose the second round. You know, like he had a very passive Marc-Andre Barrio facing off against him. And I don't know that he lost the second round of the fight, but he also just didn't do much.
Yeah, I mean that I didn't get that far in my talk of like Brendan Allen just kind of being the guy he's gonna be, I think.
Yeah.
But Chris Curtis has been Chris Curtis now for a long time. Like he was essentially the fighter he is now back in the PFL, you know, in 2019. And it is not, there's not really been a distinct change. Chris Curtis has the very dangerous and probably very necessary, but also dangerous conception of just, he knows exactly what fighting looks like for him. And that's what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it is good in that he always comes out with like the same plan and the same set of tools, and he doesn't confuse himself. But it's also like it is definitely something where it's also seems like it just keeps him from evolving.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, he gets anybody who understands how Chris Curtis fights anymore can frustrate him.
Yeah. Well, you can't just understand it. You also have to be like actually consistent in how you play the foil. Like I said, like if Brendan Allen took a cue from that Jack Hermanson fight, unless he's improved his footwork, I wouldn't trust that to work for him. Because it's not like Chris Curtis has never beaten somebody who decides to fight him on the back foot.
Yeah, well, when I say, like I said, I didn't say that you can just beat Chris Curtis if you know how he fights. I just mean you can get him frustrated because he's really easy to make frustrated.
Yeah, but you can frustrate him to the point that he will just decide to turn it up enough to get to you, unless you're actually constantly changing angles and just never letting him set his feet like Hermanson did.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pick Chris Curtis again.
Yep.
Like you said before, it was close. Up until the point where Curtis just started crushing Allen with every shot he landed. But that happened with such a feeling of inevitability. Like once Chris Curtis got in the front foot and started plugging in body punches, it just felt like a very natural build to the point where Allen suddenly had his back to the fence. And rather than moving his feet to get away, he was trying to plant his own feet and counter. and just got destroyed by the superior combination puncher.
Yeah, for all Allen's improvement striking, he still doesn't knock anybody out at all.
Yeah.
Ever.
And also, nobody knocks Chris Curtis out.
And nobody knocks Chris Curtis out. And so, yeah, that means that he is going to go. I mean, you know, he has enough faith in his hands these days. He's going to spend probably a lot of time kickboxing. And even if he doesn't, like, you watch that Paul Craig fight and Allen just kind of goes out there and wrestles. And it's not easy or comfortable for him to be.
Also, Chris Curtis is much harder to take down than Paul Craig.
Yes, he's much harder to take down.
Curtis has 92% takedown defense in the UFC.
Yeah, and Allen, when he's going forward, he is not defensively responsible at all. Even against Paul Craig, he got caught on several occasions stepping in to punch Paul Craig. And so, yeah, it does just feel to me like if he's going to go out there and he's going to have to do a lot of kickboxing with Chris Curtis, he's going to win for a while because everybody does. And then Chris Curtis will start to get his timing. And we have seen plenty of Chris Curtis fights where once he starts to get his timing, he just tunes people up.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I have the same read as I did the first time. And if that ends up being wrong because Allen actually just catches Curtis and Curtis is starting to lose a step or
he just has an off night
or whatever, then hey, it can happen. Like, Chris Curtis is not immune to losing fights. Or even having them be very close with fighters that he should be much better than.
But a lot of his wins do feel kind of clutch, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, he is a fighter that often he's just losing and then he lands a big knockout or he gets in rhythm enough to just steal away the back half of a fight.
Yep.
And, you know, that didn't happen against Kelvin Gastelum. And Gastelum didn't have to knock him out or take him down. He just out-brawled him, you know, for long enough that Curtis couldn't get the win.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible, but we've seen it, and I don't have enough feeling that anybody's changed so significantly that it's going to be different. Also has to be said, the last really good striker that Brendan Allen fought was Chris Curtis.
Yeah.
You could also argue it was Jacob Malkoon, but that fight was just a wrestling match where Malkoon won all the wrestling and Allen did all the offense stuff.
Yeah, and Malkoon is not a dangerous striker per se.
No. No.
His most dangerous limb on his body is apparently his pelvis.
I'm still going to argue that it was the punches he landed first, but it could have been the pelvis.
Did you see the gash on top of...
Head? Very directly from a left hook.
The gash on the top of his head was?
Yeah. Oh. You can watch the video. Right as Petrosky's leaning in and driving forward, Malkoon hit him with a hard left hook right on top of the head in the spot where that gash appeared. And then a little clipping right hand behind it as well that didn't do a lot. But I honestly think that that left hook is what really did it.
Yeah. Well, the point being, the last good striker Brendan Allen fought was Chris Curtis, and the last one before that was Sean Strickland.
Yeah.
They both knocked him out.
Yep. So
hard not to pick Curtis again.
Odds on the fight, Brendan Allen is the favorite. Allen opened at minus 195, got down as low as minus 225, but is back up to minus 192. Curtis opened at plus 173, is currently at plus 171. I mean, I get that Curtis can get really frustrated and in his own head.
And Allen has a ton of wins, I guess. But
and Allen has a ton of wins, but...
Either people know something we don't about where these fighters' personal situations, or simply they don't understand that styles make fights. Because
yeah,
like I said, both the Strickland and the Curtis fights, neither of these guys are known for being super aggressive knockout punchers who like walk people down, and both of them got to do that against Brendan Allen.
Yeah,
and he just hasn't faced another hard punching skilled striker since.
Yep. All right, that brings us. Oh, we have some alternate stats that I can't forget. I should have done them in the intro, but then I got on a whole screed. As noted, our producer notes, we've got one ranked fight tonight, which would be our main event, and three ranked fighters, which would be our two main event fighters, and. Norma Dumont.
Oh.
Yeah. Ringing endorsement there.
I was like, who could it be? Is she ranked at bantamweight?
Yes.
Okay. I know she's ranked at featherweight.
We have 10 Contender Series alumni, because that is what the UFC is now. It is the major leagues for the Contender Series AAA.
10 Contender Series alumni and no Tough alumni.
Yeah, Tough lives only in Dana White's imagination.
Literally, the last season of Tough didn't even result in a fight.
Yeah.
So, not even the people who get selected to be on the show care about it anymore.
Nope. It is Dana White is keeping that baby on life support because he just can't stand to pull the plug.
Yeah.
And otherwise, nobody else cares at all. Yeah. And three fighters coming directly from the Contender Series for this, four making their debut, and eight fighters whose last fight was also in the Apex. So they are really just... stuck in the bottom of the barrel here.
Yeah, it's like some kind of Greek punishment.
Yes,
you like make it to the UFC. Probably you had like two fights in the Contender Series. They were brutal wars because that's the only way you get in. And then you finally get in.
Fascism and your currency falls apart.
Yeah, you make all these sacrifices and then you just fight in the Apex forever.
Yep. All right. Co-main event, Alexander Hernandez, Damon Jackson. And this is actually a really tough fight to call because I am not sure at all if Damon Jackson is that guy enough to beat Alex Hernandez.
Yeah.
Billy Quarantillo did it. Bill Algeo did it. Drew Dober did it. Donald Cerrone did it. Even Thiago Moises and Renato Moicano. But every single one of those people is a better athlete than Damon Jackson.
Yeah, that's part of the equation here. The other part, and why I'm actually very interested in this fight, is that Billy Quarantillo only just did it.
You mean Bill Algeo?
Algeo only just did it because I thought that was the most mature, sophisticated striking performance yet from Alexander Hernandez. I think that was the first time he has really looked like something more than just a capital T technical fighter.
He collected himself really well late.
Yeah. Life. And he did a lot of great counter punching and he used his defense. He didn't get run over when Algeo came after him. Like, he looked much calmer in a torrid back and forth striking battle than I've ever seen. It looked to me like he came out the other side, basically, of this long journey to improvement. And he just didn't quite get it done, but I thought it was a really strong performance that, you know, in a lot of the ways where he has not been strong before. So now you put him in there against somebody who can probably replicate some of the Quarantillo approach, but is much less physical than any of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel like I kind of believe in Alexander Hernandez to build on what he did last time and for it to result in a win. Because let's not forget, Alexander Hernandez is a phenomenal athlete.
He really is. And it has to be remembered, too, in the midst of all of his losses that I just listed, he did beat Jim Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And he beat Mike Breeden, which isn't, I know, that impressive to people, but Breeden actually has the ability to be a bully, as we saw against Enshul Jubilee, if he's not physically overmatched.
Gritsmacher's the same. He's beaten a lot of real, like, AAA versions of this stuff, tough style matchup.
Yeah. And so it really is like, if you're just aggressive without the physicality, Alexander Hernandez can beat you.
Yeah.
If he can be the physically dominant guy all the way through, he usually just tends to keep that and sometimes just stomp people.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go with Alexander Hernandez here.
Mm-hmm.
Just does not feel like to me like Damon Jackson is. I mean, he will be aggressive enough. He fights angry. He fights really hard. He pushes himself all the way through the fight. And he's a good finisher if he sees an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
But he can also just be physically bullied and tuned up. And, you know, you can look at that Dan Argueta fight, too, and be like, wow, if Dan Argueta had more functional tools to his game,
mm-hmm.
he would have won that fight because he did a lot of physically imposing work on Jackson, but just didn't have anything that he could really do with that once he got to strong positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Damon Jackson, like, he has overperformed against superior athletes better than Hernandez has performed against, like, equivalent athletes.
Yeah, I mean, he beat Mirsad Bektic.
Yeah, yeah. Jackson will absolutely break you if he is allowed to stay around long enough and you are susceptible to that. And Hernandez has been susceptible to that in the past.
Yeah. It's a well-matched fight. Like I say, I think it is really a question. Is Damon Jackson enough that guy to beat Alexander Hernandez?
Yeah. It's also a question of, is Alexander Hernandez still the guy who just loses to that guy?
Sure.
And again, I really think against Bill Algeo, I was like, I think this guy might actually be good now.
Mm-hmm.
This just looked like a really solid, calm, measured, but still dangerous striking performance from him. And I find it very hard to imagine that Damon Jackson will be able to out-grapple Alexander Hernandez, who is about as tough to out-wrestle as Chris Curtis, if not more.
Yeah, although it is one of the ways that if his confidence starts to go, then that can really push his cardio, is being forced to continue grappling.
Yeah.
That was a big part of the Billy Quarantillo fight that got him standing TKO'd.
Yeah.
I
also think he would have, just because, again, he beat a bunch of guys who are definitely like aggressive bullies, but just weren't on his level.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he hadn't made improvements, he'd still have a pretty decent shot here, just because Damon Jackson's pretty damn hittable.
Yeah, this would be the least good athlete to ever beat Alexander Hernandez.
Yes, by far. Yeah.
And that, you know, that's why alongside the fact that I do agree with you, he did look better in his last fight than he has ever before in terms of just keeping his composure and sticking to a game.
Mm-hmm.
Those are both the good reasons to pick him for me.
Yep. Co-signed. I'm also picking Hernandez.
Hernandez is the favorite, open at minus 161. It's currently at minus 196. So those odds are getting longer. Damon Jackson open at plus 144. It's currently at plus 174. All right. That brings us to a featherweight bout. Morgan Charrier against Chepe Mariscal.
Yeah, next we're going to find out from John Enick. This is pronounced Morgan Char.
Yeah.
Asshole got me to mispronounce Manon Fiorot's name.
Fiorot.
Did I tell you it is Fiorot?
Yeah, no, we had a whole thing about it.
All the Frenches were mad at me for listening to John Enick.
Yep.
Apparently a ton of French people listened to my podcast, and they were like, no! Actually, they were more like, no!
No!
Ha, ha, ha! C'est no! this is the real curse of like all these Apex cards is that I took a look at this matchup and I was like, who the hell is Morgan Charrier?
Yeah.
And then I looked at his record even before seeing if I was like, oh yeah, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
I forgot. I was hyped about this dude. I just didn't have enough room in my brain to securely lock that name away.
Mm-hmm.
We were both very ready to be impressed by Morgan Charrier.
Yep.
In his UFC debut. And I think he impressed us more than we expected to be.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy because, like, if you were to look at this dude on paper, you'd be like, man, he's got a ton of losses.
Yeah.
But as we discussed last time, basically every one of those losses is a close decision where if you watch the fight, it's simply because he doesn't do enough.
Yep.
He never looks outmatched or outclassed. He's a phenomenal athlete with really great kickboxing technique. It's just that he was like Tyron Woodley mode all that time. And in the last 2 years, he has discovered that actually he can go out there and put combinations together and crush people.
Yeah, he is a tailor-made young veteran.
Just yes.
Kid who clearly grew up fighting way over his head. You know, you go back to his early record and you can see he just had like 4 straight losses in his first 6 fights.
Yeah.
And yet then has been just learning and learning to scrap it out and finding ways to survive and to stay in fights. And it's been a very long road for a guy who's only 28 to get to a point where it all just kind of clicks. And it's just like, oh, wait, no, I'm a really good athlete. I don't have to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no longer a skinny 16-year-old fighting adults. I am a 28-year-old who can do other things.
A shredded 28-year-old.
Yeah.
This dude is clearly a top-flight athlete.
And yeah.
Probably all that experience might come in very useful as he, I mean, I'm fully expecting Morgan Charrier to pretty quickly rise in the rankings and be fighting ranked fighters very soon.
I mean, yeah, it would be really stupid of the UFC to, it would be a very Hany Barcelos thing.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
Keep him on the prelims fighting almost good, like, good fighters or other unknown, really tough outs for his whole career. And I think
the advantage that Morgan Charrier has is that he is not Brazilian. He is French.
Yeah.
And probably the UFC brass will have dollar signs in their eyes at the prospect of having another Cyril Gane that they can maybe market to French people, which they've not really been able to before.
The cheese eaters.
That's right. The cheese eaters, those garlic breathed bastards.
Wine slurping.
I love that the garlic smell stereotype is from the English.
Yeah, yeah.
And you discover why that is if you watch like a Gordon Ramsay video and he's like, it'd be like an episode of Kitchen Nightmares. He's like, it's too much fucking garlic. And the guy put like 2 cloves.
Yeah,
a pot of stew. The English just don't like flavor.
No, they don't. Yeah,
we as Americans can agree with the French. Garlic is delicious, and you should.
I mean, it's not like they're Italians. Come on,
the Italians don't use as much garlic as the French.
Oh,
we are the ones who put all the garlic in the Italian food, and they're mad at us about that. And we can shake hands with the French on this. If the recipe Italians says 2 cloves of garlic. Yeah, of course. If the recipe says 2 cloves of garlic, you add 5. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, Morgan Charrier is going to beat Chepe Mariscal.
Yeah, I do think this is actually a tougher fight than I would have suspected for him.
Yeah.
Mariscal, I mean, basically, Charrier should knock Mariscal out.
I mean, Mariscal had so much trouble with the jab of Jack Jenkins.
He did.
In the early going of that fight that Charrier has an excellent jab.
He does. Charrier should win this, but it has to be remembered that this is somebody who spent a lot of their career fighting down to their competition.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. they weren't active enough. And it's improved lately, but you know, like I would rate Chepe Mariscal is a more dangerous opponent than Jordan Vucinic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
I mean, as much trouble as he had with Jack Jenkins' jab, he still tried to be all over him as much as he could.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to lay down just because he's getting hit clean.
Mariscal is a creator of at all times in all places. He will mm-hmm. try to be aggressive all the time, put forward pressure together all the time. If Charrier doesn't knock him out, this could be a very difficult fight.
Sure. I agree with that.
That's what I would say. I'm picking Charrier. I think he should go out there and just take advantage of the gaping defensive holes that Mariscal leaves, trying mm-hmm. to be aggressive all the time. But, I also thought Jack Jenkins should have solved that problem. And Mariscal ended up breaking his arm, slamming him.
I don't know how that's recorded. It's recorded as arm injury. It should be TKO Whizzer.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's what it was. He just kept his Whizzer and broke the dude's arm with it.
Yeah.
It wasn't an incidental injury.
So, I like this fight, honestly. I think it's a good booking, and I just hope that, like, after they have had Charrier get his feet wet a couple of times, if he can really perform well here.
Yeah.
Just like get him in there with Alex Caceres. Get him in there with
make him fight Juliana Rosa. I would like that.
Juliana Rosa or Touchy Feely, Andre Feely.
Andre Feely, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Something like that, borderline top 15. And then just, get him in with fight with like your Lerone Murphys and Danny Yeaves and Sadiq mm-hmm. Youssefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like that guy.
I don't think there's any need to rush him too much.
No,
aside from the fact that he's not just another Brazilian, he is also younger than Barcelos was when he got to the UFC. But yeah, one or two more fights and maybe that third one should be against a gatekeeper.
Yeah, I mean, he's 28 and he's been at this for a decade and his game is clicking. Just take advantage, like get him in the big fights when he's in his prime. And I think he is in his prime.
He looks like it.
Yeah. But I'm going to agree with you. I think the Mariscal, there are so many defensive openings there that Charrier should be able to navigate this fight a lot like he did against Zucchini, who went out there and threw a lot of volume and tried really hard to land big on Charrier right out of the gate
mm-hmm.
and just got picked off repeatedly with slick counter shots
mm-hmm.
for every error he made. And then eventually got booted really hard in the body. Just one of the more brutal standing body kicks I've seen in recent time.
Yep. Front kick to the belly.
So, yeah. But it's a good fight. Chepe Mariscal is a tough dude who he's going to cause problems for the people in the UFC for a while. As long as people don't, if people just think that they can scare him off with something. He is not a fighter to ever get scared off of anything.
Yeah.
Odds on the fight. Charrier opened at -122, is currently at -115. not giving him a lot of favors in the odds. Moscow opened at plus 111, got up as high as plus 147, but he's back down at plus 104. So gamblers are not loving Morgan Charrier as a favorite. I think they are looking at all those losses he's got on his record and saying, why not that again?
It should be a very worrying sign for us that we're like, we feel like we have the inside line on a bunch of these odds.
Yeah.
But really, like, I don't see how on earth you would favor Brendan Allen over the guy who knocked him out last, or hittable Chepe Mariscal against one of the blue chippiest prospects we've seen in a while.
Yeah. I think it's just, in part, there's a lack of understanding of what sometimes what the process looks like for a fighter becoming good. You know, like Jorge Masvidal, by the time he was really, you know, knocking out Darren Till and Ben Askren and all that, everybody had overlooked his potential for success because he had had such a long career of disappointments. But you go back and look at most of those fights for Masvidal, and you'd be like, oh, this is a really good competitive fighter who just was not focused enough and whose game was just not tuned to winning closely enough.
Yeah.
It was not a lack of skill or lack of ability. And I think Charrier is very much that same thing. Especially it speaks really well to him that despite 9 losses on his record, he has never lost by stoppage ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're all just like tepid decisions where he just is clearly fighting not to get blown out.
And yeah, I mean, his last 4 losses, majority decision, split decision, majority decision.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's just him not doing enough. And if you look at his last 4 fights, it just seems like that guy's not there anymore.
Yep.
Those things can always come back. You never know. But
you never know. The Masvidal path was a long and often disappointing one all the way up to the moment of his stardom. And then immediately afterward, too. Like, he hit that peak and it was just boom, over. All right. That brings us to a lightweight bout. Ignacio Bahamondes, Christos Giagos, and this is probably the right fight for Bahamondes, despite his struggle with Ludovic Klein. I mean, Bahamondes, I think he really just came in with Ludovic Klein is such a game plan specific fighter, and Bahamondes did not come in prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Klein is a guy that you really, if you want to beat him, you need to either be able to stall him or you need to be able to lean on standard techniques in a way that that doesn't allow for his game to be tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Bahamondes came in and tried to brawl him and basically just found himself getting outworked at range, at distance, where he should have been better because he's so tall, but it's just not the core of Bahamondes' game. And, you know, I think it also speaks to the loss he had against John McDessie, too, where he goes and he finds these strikers that are, like, actually kind of short finesse strikers.
Mm-hmm.
And he tries to brawl them, and they just out-finesse him.
Mm-hmm.
But Christos Giagos is a brawler.
Yeah.
And he had a few moments of early success against Daniel Zellhuber and woke up the version of Daniel Zellhuber that fights a lot like Ignacio Bahamondes, mm-hmm, when pushed, and started to get tuned up. And I think that that's probably what's going to happen here. is that Giagos is just going to walk straight into the heart of what of the best part of Bahamondes's game, or Bahamond. Yeah, Giagos is going to walk into this game, and it will just be a fighter that is more, that has more tools to offer in a brawl, where Giagos is almost purely in a counter hooks and overhands kind of guy.
Yep. Yeah, this has actually happened to Giagos a lot in his career.
Yeah.
He does sort of what Brian Kelleher did to Cody Garbrandt.
Mm-hmm.
Where he just like goes way, way too hard. He only has one speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then just gets himself into a fight where suddenly finds out he didn't want it.
Yep.
I think that sounds like a pretty apt call for this. Bahamondes can definitely handle himself in a brawl.
Yeah.
He is, despite his frame, like Bahamondes is not a very good long fighter.
He's not.
But he's pretty feisty and dangerous in the pocket. And yeah, I suspect that he's just going to be able to overwhelm Giagos there with more creative, higher output boxing.
Yeah, better knees, better kicks,
yeah,
inside.
That's right. Yeah.
And a real comfort just staying in the pocket and continuing combinations.
Yep.
Where Giagos is much more of a bounce in with a couple of big shots and bounce out or over pursue kind of guy.
Yeah. He's got like a reductive version of Michael Chandler's boxing game.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have Chandler's jab.
No. Or power.
Yeah.
He's not a bad athlete, but he's not a, like that one hitter quitter he hit on Ricky Glenn.
Yeah.
I mean, that was always, that Glenn is just that guy. He was just going to take that shot and not wear it well.
Yeah. But, possible. It's very possible he might be able to trouble Bahamondes if he can get in some wrestling.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a serious minefield just to get there with Bahamondes's clinch knee game.
Mm-hmm.
But that's certainly an area where Bahamondes really struggled with Klein.
Mm-hmm.
He's just too willing to accept a bad position on the ground, but he won't accept it forever. And I just think he's got a little more staying power and stamina than Giagos.
Yeah, and Giagos is always so interested in being aggressive.
Yeah.
That he's rarely ever a fighter who just gets a takedown and then makes that work for him for a long period of time.
We'll just hold the position and win.
Yeah. Bahamondes is a big favorite here, much more than is reasonable, all things considered. Opened at -303, is currently -318. Christos Giagos opened at +227, is currently at +269. That's more the odds I would have expected for like Charrier Mariscal, you know?
Yeah.
Bahamondes is, he is fun, but he doesn't fight long well at all.
And odds all across this main card.
Yeah. And he's lost to a couple, he's had several losses over his career to fighters that aren't very good. And sometimes, like Preston Parsons way back in 2016, aren't controlled at all.
Yeah.
Are just willing to be physical and get in there. And that is what Giagos is.
Yeah, that's what happens when you brawl with everybody.
Yeah. All right. That brings us to a heavyweight bout. Łukasz Brzeski against Walter Walker.
Now, clearly, because one is spelled with a V, the last name has to be pronounced Walker, right?
I probably, but I mean, come on, that name didn't just appear in Brazil of its own volition.
It's another Brazilian with a name like a Nazi, and this one kind of looks like a Nazi, folks. This is some like somewhat blonde. He has the fucking Ragnar Lothbrok haircut from the Vikings TV show. He's got the pointy beard. I'm not above saying it. This man is a Nazi. There's something going on with this fella. Something going on with him. And he's fighting a pole.
That's right.
You think that's an accident?
No, he demanded that fight, in fact. He came into the UFC immediately.
You have poles here? Yeah. He just has a fully German accent despite being born and raised in Brazil. Tell me where the Poland are. Yeah. So I don't know about Walter Walker. Also, he was Walter Ignacio at his last Titan fight.
You know how Brazilians are.
Is Walker even a name, or did you just pick it because it sounds more Germanic?
That's right. He's Walter Ignacio da Silva. And he's like, no, it's Walter Walker.
Yeah, I would like a more pure name, please. Bitte. His name is The Clean Monster.
Right.
What does he mean by clean? Genetically? Is that what he's getting at there? Something's up with this guy. I'm telling you. I don't trust him. I do not trust him. He is a brute, man. He is just an absolute brute, Walter Walker.
He is.
Which is to say, like, not very good in a lot of ways, except a strong willingness to wrestle.
Yeah, and I will say, has some reasonable speed, foot speed especially, and even hand speed.
He's not to start the fight.
He's not technical at all, but he's got some reasonable speed.
Yeah.
And he is able to stay reasonably composed as fights go on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it helped in that fight with Alex Nicholson that he knew he just had to get out of jail free card whenever he wanted it.
Yeah.
Just go for a takedown. It'll work.
Like, he does not get as desperate as other heavy. He seems like he's in shape for a heavyweight. That's
Yeah, he's a hoss, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to feel like he's going to be a tough out for Łukasz Brzeski just because he's so big and strong. And Brzeski got super tired, actually. Like, we were really impressed with his stamina in that fight with
Budaj.
And then, like, Carl Williams pressed him with the wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And put the pressure on him for real, and he was like gasping for air like 3 minutes into the fight.
Yeah,
he's a guy who will definitely still fight hard if allowed, even when he gets tired.
He really needs his rhythm that he can control, and that's what Budaj gave him.
Yeah,
that is a fight that, like, he outlanded Budaj like 2 or 3 to 1.
Yeah,
and still lost. Yeah. But he got to set all the pace and do everything at the speed and the way he wanted, which makes losing a really bad sign. But yeah, Cortez Acosta and Williams both didn't let him do that. And he was notably much shakier having to operate in fights where he didn't get to be in control.
Yep, he just couldn't keep up with that level of aggression. And coming, that's the kind of aggression you can expect from Herr Walker. And and again, he is also, like, huge. He's a hoss.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pick him.
Yeah, his game is really, really unpolished, but he's big enough and strong enough. And at 10-0... 11-0. What am I looking at? I was looking at the MMA series promotion he'd been in that had his record at 6-0. At 11-0, there we go, against a reasonable collection of middling regional heavyweights, like not just cans. I got to assume he's tough enough, too.
Yeah.
Like, he's been to multiple decisions. He's not just knocking people out in one round. Kind of a bad sign, but at the same time, we know he's in a lot of fights where he's getting hit. So if he's got the chin, he's got the size, and he's got the fitness, yeah, I just got to pick him over Brzeski.
I mean, to be honest, heavyweight who knocks everyone out in the first round is more often a bad sign than a good one.
Yeah, it's true.
The vast majority of those dudes very quickly do not pan out.
Yeah, it is a division where having the durability when you get to the UFC level, almost anybody who's in that division and staying there is incredibly durable. And so you have to assume that your fight will go 3 rounds.
Yeah. Not all of those guys are Tom Aspinall. Most of them are not.
Yeah. So Yeah, I'll take Walter Walker, Meinier.
The clean monster. Something's off about that. Just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, yeah. It does also say something that he then, you know, despite being a Brazilian fighter who was formerly based in Brazil, then went off to Russia to do all of his fighting and training.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Soon he'll change his nickname to Der Obergruppsführer.
All right. Odds on the...
Die Panzer. Yeah. Comes off about this one, folks. Keep an eye on him. The odds, I believe you were going to
read. Yeah, I was just going to say, when he's talking about camps, just, you know.
I had a very good camp this year.
You mean a training camp?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, das ist richtig. Yeah, klar.
I hope he sticks around for give me a great great use for my limited German vocabulary.
Breschke opened at plus 282. He's currently at plus 233, so the odds getting closer. And
Walker. Jesus, Walker. We just talked about him for 30 minutes.
I know. Walker opened at minus 400. He's currently at minus 272. So that's, yeah, they should get closer. Breschke has, if Walker can't take him down, then there's a very good chance that Breschke will go out there and start putting calf kicks on him.
Yeah.
And if he can just set that pace and set the standard and keep it, there's nothing in any of Walker's fight footage to suggest that he can deal with a kicking game.
Yeah.
So the odds shouldn't be too wide on this. And despite getting knocked out by Waldo Cortez Acosta, I'm not sure Walker is anywhere near that kind of puncher for a one-punch delivery.
Yeah.
And otherwise, Breschke has been very tough over his career. So we'll see. We're picking Walker, but I like that the odds are getting close on that. All right. That brings us to our last fight of the main card. Trevor Peak, Charlie Campbell, and just the swanginest, banginest, good old boy broiest parking lot throwdown that the UFC has to offer.
Mm-hmm. Except that Trevor Peak is a shell of himself.
Yeah, so that is a consideration, that Trevor Peak seems like he might actually be trying to get good.
It's a mistake. Which is
extremely unfortunate.
He started from too far behind, son.
Yeah.
There's no catching up now. Just stay true to yourself. That's what we want.
I mean, the thing is that I still think that there is probably a pretty good athlete in the heart of Colin Farrell here, and I mean that with, like, spelled F-E-R-A-L. that allowed him to basically just fight like an,
for sure,
unhinged badger.
He's really, really fast.
Really fast. And
like, he can throw the stupidest, most inefficient punches on earth, and they are still quicker than the straight punches coming from a lot of his opponents.
Yeah. And that kind of athleticism does give him the opportunity to just improve a lot if he actually sets his mind to improving. But it does feel a bit like a can, like a dried pea in a can, in terms of mind to set.
Yeah, it's just that his first effort to do that was very typical of MMA fighters, and that he just decided to do less. His technique didn't look much better.
No, he just was like, what if I just don't put myself in as much danger. It's like, well, then you're just not going to get anything done.
Yeah. I'm just going to do less, and also I'm going to try to wrestle some, which he's not very good at.
Yeah. If you're going to stay away from people, they're going to see everything coming, no matter how fast you are. And if you're going to try to wrestle, that actually is one of the places where even being fast and strong, if you don't have any of the technique for it, you waste a lot of energy.
Yep.
That said, Charlie Campbell loves to brawl.
Yep.
And he is a very nervous fighter.
One of the classic brawler brains.
Yeah.
Who brawls because he's scared. Fights like an animal in a trap.
Like that Alex Reyes fight. Alex Reyes shouldn't have ever been in there fighting after his neck injury and all that. And but until Campbell accidentally just blasted him in a wild fracas, Alex Reyes was doing great. Because Campbell was just twitching and overcorrecting to every feint, every flinch, every move. He would, you know, Campbell would be like throwing a leg to check a kick that never come and that never came, rather. Or he would be like ducking and spinning out of the way of an overhand where you just like that. It's just one punch, man. You don't. And I got to pick even a capital T technical Trevor Peak. If Campbell is going to try to brawl and get flinchy, then I think Peak is just going to brawl back and hit him really hard.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that whatever that Trevor Peak isn't just in like Leonard Garcia technicality right here, right? That like,
yeah,
all it takes is for the for it to be demanded of him for him to go right back to being insane. Yeah, I still don't really feel good picking Trevor. Like, you just shouldn't even have to pick Trevor Peak fights.
No,
that's not the point.
Yeah, this is the Futurama joke about like everybody going to the ape fights where you just seeing like giant gorillas fighting against each other and just pure like brutal combat sports entertainment for the decadence of it. This is that kind of, you know, feels a little dirty to be watching this, but if I am watching it, I should be like, you can only watch this fight if you bet $500 on like injury, you know.
Yeah.
You have to bet that like somebody's going to get their arm broken or something like that. That's the only way you're allowed to watch this fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a 2-drink minimum.
Yeah. It, for the fighters.
That's good.
just throw a 6-pack in the middle of the octagon and they can fight over that. That'll be home for both of them.
I'll pick Trevor Peak too, because I agree. I mean, I think Campbell's gonna force him to go nuts. Even then, it can't be a sure thing, but
no, it's a coin flip for two dudes who are, if they haven't been both knocked out, Trevor Peak has only lost to Chepe Mariscal somehow. And Charlie Campbell, he did get knocked out by Chris Duncan.
Yeah.
So he has been knocked out.
And the trouble with Campbell as compared to Peak in an all-out brawl is that Campbell has some idea about doing cool shit, which will get him in further trouble.
Yeah. Like
there's a very funny moment in that Reyes fight where he tries to do a spinning elbow and Reyes just punches him in the face because like he did it from really far away. Trevor Peak's moves are no less like dangerous to himself, but they're very straightforward in their intent.
Yeah. I mean, if you put a pipe in Trevor Peak's hand, he would be attacking you very effectively with that. Like it is very much the fighting of somebody who knows how to hurt you first and foremost and is learning the technique to make it better, you know?
Also, I feel like Charlie Campbell's, I just noticed this for the first time, that his celebration after knocking out Reyes, did you catch that?
I don't remember it.
I believe he does the move of miming a big round ass in front of him and then like licks his fingers and wets his imaginary penis and does a few vulgar thrusts. And there was like an official there blocking this. And I feel like the cameraman did us a favor because I didn't want to see what those hips were doing in that moment. He deserves to get knocked out for that. He's got it coming. Too vulgar.
Indeed. You know?
Children are watching this.
I am also somehow, I don't know how it is that Charlie Campbell and Charles Radke are different dudes, but they are. And I have to come to grips with that because they do seem like exactly the same dude.
Let's go, Trevor. Unleash the feral hog. The feral hog within.
Otherwise, Charlie Campbell will unleash his feral hog.
I had the same thought. I wasn't going to say it. I heard what I said.
I am also going to start the campaign from here on out to call Trevor P. Colin Farrell from this point forward.
But the spelling is where the
Yeah. Should be his nickname.
It should. What is his nickname?
Does he even have one?
Doesn't have one. That almost is more appropriate.
It really is. All right. Peak opened at plus 165, is currently at plus 161. Charlie Campbell opened at minus 185, he's currently at minus 179. I'm sorry, but one of these two dudes who brawl all the time has been knocked out before and the other one hasn't.
Yeah.
That's really all I need.
What are these odds?
Right?
All across this card, the odds are very strange.
They really are.
To access the bonus content of this episode, you must be a paid subscriber. To do that, go to themmadrawpodcast.substack.com and subscribe today.